listeners. Welcome to Grief Out Loud. Remember the last time you tried to talk about grief and suddenly everybody left the room? Grief Out Loud is opening up this often avoided conversation because grief is hard enough without having to go through it alone. We bring you a mix of personal stories, tips for supporting children, teens, and yourself, and interviews with professionals in the grief world. Platitude and cliche-free, we promise. Grief Out Loud is hosted by me, Jana DeCristofaro, and produced by Dougie Center, the National Grief Center for Children and Families in Portland, Oregon. Anyone who's been listening to the show for a bit will know that our approach to grief doesn't involve stages or tasks or steps. We believe grief isn't linear and that it's different for everyone. And in that, there can be themes that, while not universal, are more common. When we talk about these themes, we offer them as a framework and not a formula for what grief should look and feel like for people. That's one of the reasons I was excited to have Claire Bidwell-Smith back on the show to talk about her new book, Conscious Grieving, in which she outlines four orientations, entering, engaging, surrendering, and transforming, that serve as a framework for approaching grief. Claire is really well known in the grief world. She's a licensed therapist, international speaker, and the author of 5 books. Claire came to this work, as many people do, through her own experience with grief. When she was 14, both of her parents were diagnosed with cancer. Her mother died 4 years later, when Claire was 18, and 7 years after that, her father also died, when Claire was just 25. So Claire gets it, on a personal and professional level. Claire's also insightful, reflective, and really easy to talk with. I think you're going to enjoy our conversation as much as I did. Just to note, we recorded this episode a few weeks before Claire's book, Conscious Grieving, came out, but it's available now in all the places that you get books. Okay, here's our conversation. Claire, thank you for coming back to Grief Out Loud. I know it's been a couple of years since we last spoke.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And for listeners who are unfamiliar with you and your story, what do you want people to know about you and your grief today?
Well, I come to my work from a really personal place. Both of my parents got cancer at the same time when I was 14, and I'm an only child. My mom died when I was 18 and my dad when I was 25. And all of that led me to the work I do today. I ended up working in hospice and then going into private practice as a therapist. So I've been specializing in grief for 15 years now. I have my 5th book coming out, all about grief, much to my children's dismay. They're like, "What's your new book about, Mom?" "Oh, it's grief again." They do not think that is cool. But, you know, whoever grows up wanting to be a grief therapist, so I get it. But I love my work.
What would your kids like you to write about, do you think?
They would like me to be someone who can give facials, is what they would like me to do. They don't want me to write about anything. They want me to give facials. My 11-year-old has a friend whose her mom gives facials. And Jules is like, "Mom, why can't you be like that?" And I'll be like, "Well, you know, if one of the pets dies, I've really got you." So
you're like, one day,
like grief humor.
One day I'm going to come in very handy for you, just not right in this moment. Well, in that sort of same arena, what do you think your parents would think of the work that you do?
I think they would not be surprised that I'm a writer. I have been writing since I was a little kid. I started writing as soon as I could, writing stories and poetry, and I was really intent on going in that direction. I think they would be really proud of the work I do, but it's not anything either of them really did. My dad was an engineer and my mother was an artist. Yeah, I think they would be proud though. I really have just tried to create a lot of space for grief that wasn't available when I was going through it. And I'm still continuing that work to this day.
Is there a way recently that your mom and your dad have shown up in your life?
They are always with me. I just saw my dad's name somewhere yesterday when I was picking up my son, and it just had me thinking about him. And I try to take those moments for what they are, you know, and just have a moment of thinking about him and thinking about the ways he shows up in my life, what he taught me, his values, who he was. You know, I feel like that in and of itself is a kind of afterlife, and staying connected with them is really important to me. I'm always talking about them to my kids and trying to impart lessons that they gave to me to them and continue to kind of bring them along in our life.
I was just thinking about how for some folks, maybe a little bit earlier on in their grief, seeing their person's name randomly somewhere or, you know, seeing a flower that reminds them of somebody can be so like devastating in the moment. And that, not for everybody, but for some folks over time, there's a shift in those reminders. And I don't know if you just happen to remember like about when that happened for you.
It took a while. You know, I really was in a lot of pain for a long time. My parents were both sick for a long time. My mother had really been my best friend. We were so close. And even though she had had cancer for, you know, 4 or 5 years, her death still came as such a shock to me. I was so young and I just didn't know what it meant to lose someone or that you could actually lose someone as important as your mom. And, at the time it was 1997 and people around me just weren't that supportive of my grief process. You know, they were like, you're an adult now, just carry on. You had her for 18 years. And so I really tried to kind of stuff away my grief and pretend like I was okay, because that's what people seem to expect. And so in those moments, when things like that popped up, I saw her name or had a memory, it was painful, because I didn't know how to hold space for it. It took me a long time. It took me well into my late 20s to really start to open up to this idea that I could have a connection with them that was beyond their physical presence and the experience I'd had with them when they were alive, because that was painful too, almost. You know, I didn't want this ethereal connection with them. I wanted them back. I wanted my mother to walk into the room and scoop me up. And, you know, I wanted things to go back to normal. And so to even come around to opening up to the idea of a connection took time, which is understandable.
Oh, it's really hitting me in this moment of you saying that, of how quick sometimes people can be like, well, they're always with you. They're always in your heart. And right at the beginning, like, that's not what I want. Like, right, I want them back here physically with me.
Yeah, absolutely. Those can be really hurtful things to hear in the moment because they're invalidating, right? You know, it just kind of dismisses how much pain someone is in and how much they're yearning for their person to come back. And I think what would be helpful in those moments is to recognize that rather than trying to fix it or make it better.
I know in this interview, we're going to talk quite a bit about your new book, Conscious Grieving. But I wanted to go a smidge back to the last time you were on the show. And we talked a lot about your book, Anxiety, The Missing Stage of Grief, which I refer and recommend constantly to people. And part of that is because I don't know if it's just me or my own history with anxiety. So I see it everywhere, but it really feels like anxiety in the experience of grief has really risen to kind of the top of what people are talking about when they talk about like what's most distressing about their grief. Are you seeing a similar pattern in your work?
I am. I really am. I mean, I think anxiety rates are soaring as it is. I just read somewhere this week that anxiety disorders are the most common mental illness in the world right now. And so I think that is rising, but I think that our experience of loss, you know, the more medicalized death becomes and the less we talk about grief and hold space for it, the more people just don't know what to do with it. The world feels very scary in that light. The anxiety book came out in May of 2020 in paperback, and it was a time when the entire world was going through grief and anxiety. And since then, I think we've continued to go through a lot of that. And I don't think we're also recognizing all the grief we're carrying from the last 4 years. You know, so much has changed and occurred. And it kind of leads into the new book, which is called Conscious Grieving, because I feel like when we're not consciously grieving and we're not being intentional with our grief process and seeking support for it, it naturally spills out in the form of anxiety.
Well, that's where I was going, Claire. So thank you. You hopped right ahead to, I was like, I think there's a connection here between this book about how to be conscious in our grief. And as you talked about, even when your mom first died, of like pushing it so far aside and then it comes out. But I'm really appreciating you putting it in the context of where we are in 2024 and I don't know if this was true for you, but I felt like at the beginning, March 2020, April 2020, there was this rush for people to talk about the grief of the pandemic and the grief of what we're going through. And I was like, we don't even know what we're going through. Like, how are we going to talk about the grief right now? And now that we're 4 years later, I don't hear as much of people talking about collectively, like, what we went through, what that means for us as individuals, how our families have changed. And so I appreciate you even just acknowledging that here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It does feel like we've just kind of moved on very quickly. And I think there's a lot of people carrying grief. And because everybody else has kind of moved on, it just always sends that message that we're supposed to too, right? We just kind of get this external reinforcement that we're supposed to have moved on and be done with that grief, when really some of us may just be feeling it for the first time.
I sometimes think too, when I'm sitting with somebody who has had their person die and they're talking about the grief of their person dying, and there's all these other factors from the context that are part of that, but there's not really space or language to do that. And I almost feel like those folks are currently carrying the burden of expressing the grief that everyone has gone through, but they're the ones that have the right ticket to talk about grief in the fact that they've had someone die. So I'm kind of talking off the cuff right now, but that just came to mind too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and it also like seems to fall on the griever to help other people understand how to talk about it, right? And that's like the last thing we need to be doing when we're grieving, is helping others feel more comfortable. You know, I always hear people talk about how they end up apologizing, you know, when they're like, oh, you know, my dad died recently, and someone's like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then you're apologizing to them for making them uncomfortable. And so then it becomes this thing where we're trying to inform people how to really hold space for grief. It's complicated.
Before we move on to talking more about conscious grieving, your new book, I just wanted to pause one more moment in that anxiety place. I know those two things probably come together, but one of the things I hear people talk a lot about is how much health anxiety they experience after their person dies. Even if their person didn't die of an illness, there's still that, like, am I going to die? The facing their own mortality, fear for other people's well-being and safety. Do you have your favorite go-to when you're trying to help yourself when that comes up?
Yeah, I think the health anxiety is so common. And you're right, it's really interesting that it will happen even when you haven't lost someone to an illness. I see that all the time myself. I think it's really important not to indulge too much in that kind of anxiety, because usually what we do when we have the health anxiety is we start checking, right? We start going down Google rabbit holes. You know, you get like a pain in your leg and you're Googling blood clots or just something crazy. And there's just too much wild stuff on Google. And when we indulge in that place, we're giving so much power to the anxiety. And the anxiety can become really insidious, right? The more we indulge in it, the more it grows, and we start routing to that place all the time. And so I think it's important to really find a balance. Like, I always tell people, the goal isn't to not have those little moments of worry or questions. You know, you get like a weird pain in your side and you're like, huh, what's that? That's normal. But what we don't want to do is continue to go down the rabbit holes with it after that. You know, stay in a rational place with it. Pivot if you need to kind of distracting your thoughts somewhere else. I think meditation and mindfulness are really good tools for this. But more often than not, we really indulge in it because it feels like we have some control when we're doing that. Like, worry makes us kind of feel like we're going to get ahead of something and we can prepare for it. But really all we're doing in that moment is keeping ourselves in this hypervigilant state that increases our anxiety. Mm.
Oh, it's so tricky, Claire, because I know for me, my favorite thing is to go down the Google rabbit hole, especially if, let's say, my dog is having a symptom. And one too many times, I have been validated in my Googling because I found an answer that maybe the vet didn't have access to.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I've set up this terrible situation where I'm like, but last time, this really helped me, so I'm going to do that some more. So
yeah, those moments of reinforcement are tricky, right? Because then that's a positive reinforcement that you're Googling and your worry was on track. But I think, again, it's about the balance, right? So I think we can all recognize when we're going into really irrational places or we're dwelling too far and too long in that state of anxiety. I like to sometimes call a friend. Like, if I'm like, is this rational? Am I really like overthinking this? I'll call a friend and I'll be like, does this sound crazy? And sometimes they'll be like, yeah. And I'll be like, okay, I'm going to move on from this.
That's a great reminder that we should all have an external fact checker that we can check in with about that. So you already kind of touched on this, that that your new book, Conscious Grieving, is directly related to that idea that if we push our grief aside, or, you know, whether we're doing it or the world is encouraging us to do it, that it can sometimes come out in ways that cause a lot of challenges for us. Yeah, tell us a little bit more about that idea behind the consciously grieving.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of our natural impulses when we're in deep grief or we've gone through a really big loss are to run from it. It can be so overwhelming. You go through a really big loss, and I think a lot of people are unprepared for the depth and breadth of emotions they experience. I mean, often we haven't ever experienced that much, you know, that much fear, sadness, longing, you know, anger. And it can be really overwhelming. So we try to just move past it. We try to tamp it down. We try to control it. Really, I think the best thing we can do in grief is kind of lean into it, really get to know it, find support for it. You know, it's not always something we can do on our own by any means, and we shouldn't. Get support in the form of books, podcasts, therapy, you know, support groups, anything like that, where you can really find space to be in your grief and understand it a little more. And then again, there's this cultural reinforcement of moving on quickly. And that comes in so many different kinds of messages, you know, in the ways that people stop showing up a few weeks or months after a loss, in the ways we don't have bereavement leave, in the ways that, you know, we just stop talking, other people stop talking about our person. When those things happen, it sends us this message that we should be moving on too, when really we might still be in deep throes of grief a year in, you know, 6 months in, we're really still grappling with this loss. I think the impetus often becomes like, let's move through it. Let's get past it. Let's get over it. And really what we need to do is be in it. And that's the way kind of through it.
Is there a story behind how this book came to you?
You know, this book is really kind of the synthesis of all the work I've been doing. I wrote it in the second person, so it's written directly to the reader. And I just wanted it to be something that was reassuring and calming and something that people can kind of flip through at random or read straight through and just have this place to kind of feel like their hand is being held while they're in this process of grief. What I always say about conscious grieving is that, you know, the loss is something that happens to us. It's not something we chose. It's not something we sought. It's not something we invited in. It's something that happened to us. But how we grieve is up to us. And that's not something that I think feels obvious to us in the beginning, because we're kind of, you know, this thing happened and we're kind of, you know, flailing about trying to get our grounding in the aftermath. And so then it kind of feels like everything is happening to us. But in fact, I think we have more agency and the ability to engage with our grief in an intentional and conscious way.
Yeah, it seems so important when it is something so huge and life-altering that has occurred to us that we didn't have any agency. Like, where can we find those small spaces of feeling like we have some choice, some control over what's happening?
Yeah, absolutely.
You write about the four orientations of conscious grieving, you know, the entering, the engaging, the surrendering, and the transforming. And I
nice job.
I cheated. I've got it up on my other screen, listeners. Could you share a little bit about each of those?
Yeah. You know, I don't think that grief is necessarily a linear process, nor is it formulaic. I know people get frustrated when they hear that grief is different for everyone, but it's true. There are a lot of variations. It depends on our relationship with the person we lost. It depends on how they died. It depends on our personality. It depends on our past experience or lack of experience with loss and grief and our life circumstances at the time. So there is a lot that varies for people, but then there's also a lot of universality to grief. And when I decided to kind of break it down into those four orientations, I just thought about kind of the experience of so many of my clients, my own experience, and entering is the stage in which we, you know, we're just kind of there. This loss has happened to us and we've entered into grief, whether we like it or not. And that whole orientation is really about kind of, you know, finding your way within that in the beginning, just getting grounded, understanding how to take care of yourself in those early throes of grief, what to kind of expect, how to normalize some of the things that might be coming up or going on. And then engaging is more when we start to really start to work with the grief process and start to get to know it and start to make choices about how we want to grieve, what kind of support we need, how we want to handle questions about our grief or our loss, how we want to handle family dynamics that come up, you know, in a big loss. That's a really tricky space for a lot of people, how we want to handle work, what tools are working for us. So that's the engaging process. And then the surrendering process, I think, is sometimes a surprising one for people, because I think what I see a lot is in the beginning of grief, people really want to get their hands around it, right? They're like, they read all the books right away. They start listening to all the podcasts literally in the first few weeks of a big loss. And they just want to like get on top of this thing. And after a while, you realize that there's a certain amount of it that you just need to surrender to, that you can only kind of control as much of it as you can. And then at some point you have to kind of surrender to the fact that this has happened and that there's identity shifts coming, that there are changes within yourself occurring, that this is going to be a grief perhaps that you carry for the rest of your life. There's a surrendering to that that I think needs to happen, but it's not something that comes right away. I think we kind of fight grief in the beginning a bit. And I think we try to, again, get our hands around it, and people want me to give them homework, you know, and then after a while they realize that there's, you know, there's a surrendering piece here that happens. And I think there can be a relief in that too. You know, a relief in just accepting and acknowledging that this has happened and that this is going to be something we carry. It doesn't mean you're okay with the person's death or that this happened at all. It'll never be okay in some cases that someone died, but it means that you're accepting that this is going to be something you live with. And then from there, the final piece is the transforming. And I think that is where it's a piece that does definitely comes later for people. And it's about really kind of recognizing all the ways that grief and loss can teach us more about ourselves and about the world around us, all the ways in which it can help us create more meaningful experiences in our lives or take stock of what we have. That's not something anybody really wants to hear about in the beginning, you know, and I get that. I didn't either. But now, you know, all these years out from my loss, and even somewhat in the early part of it, I began to notice the ways in which I was changing in positive ways. You know, I was becoming more compassionate, more empathic. I was really starting to see the world in ways that I don't think I would have been able to had I not gone through those losses at that time. And, you know, now today I look back and I think, I don't even know who I would be, you know, if my parents were still alive. There's a lot that I'm grateful for that I've become in their absence.
I'm sitting with this idea that these different places that people go in their conscious grieving, they don't happen linearly, but they do seem to kind of unfold over time. And that mm-hmm. depending on where people are, it can be like, I don't even want to know about that one. Don't talk to mm-hmm. me about that one.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that, I think you said it was the surrendering, which is the one that can be the most surprising to people. Mm-hmm. Is there one, and it might be the same one, that you find people are like the most hesitant or fearful or resistant to?
I think it's actually the engaging piece, because I think that comes at a time when we are still maybe trying to suppress the grief or avoid it. And usually we hit a wall where we realize we need some tools, we need some support, and that's where engaging comes in. However, when we make the choice to engage in grief, and when we make the choice to start to support ourselves through it, it can sometimes feel like you're letting go of your person, or like it's okay that they're gone. Taking those steps to move forward and take care of ourselves can sometimes make you feel like you're taking steps away from your person, when in fact, I think that those steps really lead you to be able to be with them and be with your grief and connect to them in better ways. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. And now it's got me thinking about how does it look? And this, you might be a great example of this, of, well, first you have like your parents have died. And so you, over time, you have maybe unconsciously gone through some of these conscious grieving orientations. And since they are like connected, but not necessarily linear, are there ways that you find yourself in all of them at all times?
I think that we can really come in and out of them. There have been times in my own life where I've thought, okay, I'm good now, I'm cool.
I've surrendered.
I've surrendered, I've transformed, like I've worked through guilt pieces or what have you. And then something will happen. You know, maybe something happens in my own life. Having children was really impactful on my grief process. Having kids while my parents weren't here, becoming a parent, things like that may reactivate some of that grief and show you that there's new pieces to surrender to engage with. And that can happen throughout our lifetimes. Hard stuff happens, you know, divorces, pandemics, you know, more loss, all of those things can kind of put you back into another realm of needing to engage, needing to surrender.
I'm also picturing, you know, in my work in the peer grief support group land, they're open-ended groups. And so people are coming in at a variety of different places in their grief. It might've been 4 days since their person died. It might've been 4 years since their person died. And so to sit in a group and think about the tangle of where people are in these different places, it's really fascinating to see like who's learning from each other, who's resisting what somebody is saying, and all the different emotions that can come up with seeing that.
Yeah. But you know, that's such an important piece of this too, that community aspect. I think that, I think we really do heal and transform in our grief through community. And that's a piece that I think is growing more than ever these days. I'm really heartened to say I see more and more grief communities available and popping up in many different forms. I think to be with other people who really understand what you're experiencing, whether or not it's the same loss, but that they are too walking through their days carrying grief, can just be so healing and make you feel less alone. You know, we all talk about and know how isolating and lonely grief can be. So to come together with other people. And then also even to see, you know, for the person who's 4 years out, to see the person who's 4 days in and to see, oh gosh, I actually have come a long way, you know, or for the person 4 days in to see the person 4 years out and think, oh, I've got a lot to come and that might be scary. So maybe I need to support myself, or there's also hope down the road. You know, this is where that person is.
Yeah. That's one that I think happens to people simultaneously. Like, oh, phew, I don't have to get over this in 4 years, but oh my gosh, what? I'm still going to be here in 4 years. So there's a lot that can happen at that beginning, that entering stage. Like you don't even know the landmarks of where you are yet.
Yeah. It can definitely be really overwhelming.
I'm curious, Claire, when you think about grief today for yourself, what does grief look and feel like for you in 2024?
You know, grief to me is quiet these days. It's not something that I feel like is necessarily on the forefront. I feel a lot of kind of more of a collective grief for things that we're going through in the world and thinking about my kids' future, climate change. And like, there's grief in that space for me more than there is grief around my personal losses. I walk with so many people who are grieving and I carry bits and pieces of all of them with me. So there's kind of a more collective grief I carry, but I also, at this point in time in my life, at this moment, this day, I feel like I see more beauty in grief than ever before. You know, it's always about relationships. It's always about love. It's about time together. It's about experiences and meaning and how beautiful that we have those things. And it seems that the more we have them and the deeper we have them, the more and deeper we grieve. Yet it's still a reflection of that time. The stories I hear about people's lives and relationships are so touching and give me hope for humanity, you know, that we can love this big and this hard and engage with each other in these ways is really profound.
Claire, you seem to be speaking fully from the transforming planet. So I appreciate that perspective.
But I'm not naive enough to know, like, you know, I could get knocked on my knees at any moment. And I know that, you know, by world events, by personal events, I know that it could be around the bend at any time. You know, I lost a cat a few years ago and that knocked me to the ground, you know, and I wasn't even expecting it. So I've started to really hold and recognize that, you know, we are vulnerable creatures. And I feel like I know what to do now when I am entering into grief, so it's not that scary in that way, but I know it's around the corner at any moment too.
Well, you speak to something so real and true there of like, I have a little bit of confidence in my ability to navigate this because I've done it before. I've gone from planet to planet and I know what it was like to go from planet to planet.
Yeah.
And that sucks. And I don't want to do that again. And here I am having to do it again. And I know I can, and I really don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah. I get anxiety sometimes about having to experience more loss because I know it so intimately and it's so painful sometimes, you know? So I have anxiety here and there about, oh, you know, when and if I will go through deep loss again.
This is one more random thought that you just sparked for me. But when I think about the idea of compassion, and you mentioned like in your grief, you've found that you've been able to hold more compassion for what other people are going through. And that seems two sides of the same coin too, where I'll hear people say, you know, when I read about a new loss in the news, or I hear about a friend of a friend whose person died, I feel so much compassion for them. And I feel that compassion with an edge because it brings me back to my own experience too. So there's like, yeah, sometimes it can be like, oh, now I'm a more compassionate person. It's like, yeah. And that comes with some weighty responsibility too.
It does, because you can really imagine a lot of what they're feeling. You know, you read a story in the news, and my kids are always yelling at me because I'm always crying, like commercials, movies, and I just feel so much. And I can imagine the experience of other people's feelings too, that I just like, I'm just constantly weeping.
So they're like, Mom, stop writing books about grief and give us some facials and stop crying while you're giving the facials.
Oh, gosh.
Well, Claire, remind us again when your book, Conscious Grieving, is going to be available for people.
It is out March 12th, which is in like 10 days. So,
okay. And listeners, by the time you're hearing this, the book is out. So where shall people go to connect with you and the book? And
yeah, the book is available anywhere books are sold, and they can go to my website, clairebidwellsmith.com, for more information. I host support groups. I do one-on-one work. I'm going on book tour, so I'll be in some major cities around the country this spring. And I also host grief trainings for professionals. So I train other professionals in grief. I've got a big one coming up in May in Los Angeles. Anyone who's interested in kind of learning more about grief to incorporate it into their work, it's going to be a really nice in-person training. I've got Colin Campbell joining me for it. Elisa Fornaray is doing a really cool workshop on race, identity, and culture. And hospice nurse Julie is coming to talk about end of life too. So it's going to be really neat.
Oh, that sounds so exciting. And Alicia and Colin are both previous Grief Out Loud guest listeners.
I adore them.
Go check them out as well. Well, Claire, I'm going to put all that in the show notes so people can find all of the books that you've written, including your original memoir, The Rules of Inheritance, which I read. I don't even know if I was working here yet at Dougie Center when I read that book. And I was like, one day I'm going to talk to this person. And here we are, having spoken twice. So I appreciate
that. Thank you.
So listeners, you can find all of Claire's amazing work in the show notes. And Claire, yeah, thank you for taking time to talk with me today, to share with our listeners about your new book. And I'm excited it's going to be out in the world.
Thank you. Thank you for the beautiful work you do and holding space for these conversations.
And listeners, you know, I say it each and every single time, but thank you for being part of our community, for making the show mean what it does. You can reach me directly at griefoutloud@dougie.org. That's also our main website, where you will find all of our free downloadable resources, information about our local programming and trainings, and each and every episode of Grief Out Loud. Excited as always to share that our podcast is sponsored in part by the Chester Stephan Endowment Fund. Thanks again for listening. We hope you'll join us again next time.